have to ask it.
All right.
Continue. Welcome. Now that we're being recorded. Hello. My name is John Maher, and I do a. I'm an audiobook narrator, and I do a podcast of my own fantasy novel, Tales of the Left Hand. And
I'm Brandon Blackmore, and I helped write a couple of role-playing games about 20 years ago, and I currently work for DriveThruRPG that sells role-playing games online as PDFs. And, a unique magic system. Can it be done? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So, right, any questions?
We were talking about it a little bit before you guys came in, and I think, you know, we were both in agreement that whatever the writer, whether it's it may, you know, the I think what you're trying to come up with for a game is different than if you're doing it for a novel, because for a novel you only have to reveal what's needed at the time. You might have something in your head, a bigger idea of how the whole magic system works that you've come up with, but you only have to reveal the pieces of it that apply to the story. I think for a game, though, you've got to have not only the whole picture, but you've got to present all of it at once so that the people can use it for playing.
Yeah. Well, in a game, you really can't have mystery about how things work.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have mystery about why they work the way they do.
Right.
For example, you know, let's say everybody in the world all suddenly got superpowers. You can make why they all have superpowers a mystery.
Yes.
You can, or magic, like Shadowrun, magic comes back. Mm. You know, used to be magic, then there wasn't for a long while, and suddenly there is magic again. You can make the reasons for that mysterious.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like the actual, you know, how do I do this? How do I do that? I want to make that lock, unlock, you know, the mechanism of actually having the player accomplish what they want. You've got to actually tell them how to do that. Otherwise, you know, unless you just want to have everything be mysterious and people point at things, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. You know, they don't know. But ultimately, you got to actually know how it works.
Right.
I think whereas in a story, you only need to reveal as much as you need to have on screen at any particular
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the map, you know.
Right.
You don't need to draw that rest of the world if people never go outside of town. You can refer to it. You know.
Yep.
And then once you refer to it, if the person, whatever you've described, either has to actually be that way, or there has to actually be a plausible reason why it wasn't that way.
Right.
Like the guy who's talking about, you know, this other country actually has no idea what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can be wrong.
Yes.
But, or lie, but, you know, ultimately,
right.
You only have to reveal what, you know, and magic's the same way.
Yeah.
I think the topic... Sorry. A unique magic system, can it be done? I think it's kind of begging the question, like, why would you ask... A lot of panels I've seen this weekend are like this. Like, why would someone ask that question? Well, they probably ask that question because they want their magic in their game or their novel or short story or whatever to somehow be, like, unique and new and special, you know? And I'm wondering, like, a unique magic system, should it be done?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you... I'm not a huge fan of novelty for novelty's sake.
Yeah.
You know,
gratuitous, you know, uniqueness or originality. It's like, well, does it serve the story? Does it, you know, if you have a, you try to come up with some, you know, what makes it unique? Is it, you know, my wife reads a number of different fantasy novels where magic exists, but the reason why, that the source of it is different. You know, the Black Jewels trilogy by Anne Bishop, for example, or she's reading a new one about like weather wardens who have genies enslaved to them, that the magic comes from that control over these extra-dimensional beings. It's like, okay, that's fine. Does it... But are those unique? They've got a different gimmick, you know, but is a gimmick the same thing as a unique system? I'm... You know, still puzzling over just like what specifically is this panel? What are we, what are we trying to find? Is there, is it a holy grail or is it just?
Well, I think everybody wants to think that they've done something nobody else has done before,
mm-hmm.
because you know, in reality, damn near everything anybody tries to do has already been done before.
Mm-hmm.
I had a great idea. Oh, unique magic systems. And this is for tabletop role playing, but I think it'd be just a generally cool idea. I had a fantasy game I was running, and part of the premise of the game was that at one point there had been this, and this part is not the new part. I know this part's not new. At one point there had been the first people,
right,
who the gods who like set everything up. The first people were too powerful, and they were like, you know, like in the Hedwig song, you know, the gods grew quite scared of our strength and defiance. Anyway, ever seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
No.
Okay. It's pervy, but it's an awesome, awesome movie. It's a musical if you like musicals. Rock musical. Anyway, whatever. So basically the gods like, okay, we just killed all them.
Right.
And the world had been very full of life and lush, and the process of killing off all the first people basically ruined the world. And it would just barely support life after that. But then they did it again, and so that's why the world is not a paradise, because it used to be, and
right,
you know, that didn't work out. But the magic part was that the first race had a kind of magic that had since been lost, that was fueled by life rather than what that world knew as magic was basically very subtle pulling strings on things, and it wasn't hugely powerful. Whereas like the first race had something where you could basically just straight convert life force into doing something.
Right.
So, but because the world itself was no longer as full of life as it had been, it had horrific consequences, you know. I could like throw a huge fireball at a city and destroy half of it, and also make the quarter mile around me never able to grow crops again.
Right.
Like that kind of thing. I thought that was brilliant. Well, there's actually a game that came out in the 80s called...
Dark Sun.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so, but, and so, yeah.
So,
a lot
whoops,
of,
there you go. It's not... It seemed like... Well, whatever. Not unique, but there you go.
You know, I'm not sure that there's really anything... nothing is absolutely original. You may come up with something... You can come up with a new take on something that no one's come up with before, but... Everything you're coming up with is indebted in some way to what happened earlier. You know, characters that I use are based off of sometimes characters friends of mine played in a game because I liked a thing that they did or a characterization trait that they had. I went, okay, I can take a piece of that. You know, because I also do this as a narration, certain characters evolve because of a voice that I liked from a character in a movie. I like the way that guy sounded. I'm like, you know, like I want my character, I'm going to try to do a voice similar to that for this guy. And because then that changed the way I wrote things for that character, because I wanted it to, the cool sounds that that voice has, I wanted to write words that use those sounds more, you know. But I'm indebted to those other voice actors, you know, for those sorts of things. Similarly, the magic that is in my world, I think of it now, it's kind of like computer programs, but magic is kind of like bandwidth. There's energy out there, and in some places it's stronger, in some places it's weaker. The character has a few things that she can do, not very many of them, but she's used them so often, she's really good at finding applications for those spells. And as, you know, the story goes on, she finds new applications for them, new ways to make use of the limited knowledge that she has. And as the story goes on, I'll keep finding new programs, and eventually she'll meet new people. I just don't call them computer programs. But as I've been writing it, I've been thinking about it. That's kind of the way I'm using that philosophy. Is that original or unique? I don't think it is. It's just my take. You know.
I'm a big fan of Jim Butcher, the Dresden Files, and I like his take on magic, which is you know, which he's a black belt, so it makes sense. But it's almost like a martial art.
Mm-hmm.
It's concentration, and it comes down to like you said, he's got a rod that he channels fire through. Now he could throw it through his hand, but it's going to hurt like hell when he does it.
Right.
Yeah, and he could will to do it, but. You know, kind of like you said with the computer program and the spells and the motions of his arm and all that, it enables
right.
him to channel it a lot better. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he has the potential to just sort of snap his fingers and do stuff, but it's going to cost him.
And this is not as true in gaming as it is in writing a story, but it's generally true, but it's more true in a story, that and we're kind of getting away from the principle of uniqueness, but we're the people on the panel, so screw it. magic in a story is almost, its limitations are as important as what it can actually do. Because if you've got somebody who can do anything, then that's not interesting.
Right.
And the Jim Butcher books in particular, he even before the character's actually done much with magic, he spends a fair amount of time telling you about the things he can't do or why he can't do certain things or why certain things are really difficult.
Right.
And some of it's social, like the Council of Wizards doesn't want you to do this kind of thing. And some of it's philosophical. Magic is purity and life. And it's just like an abomination to use it to hurt people because it's just like beating somebody to death with a painting. You know, I think that was his analogy.
It sounds familiar.
If it wasn't exactly that, it was a very similar thing that he said. And so the limitation, and then there are the things that he simply just can't do because he doesn't have this or doesn't have that.
Yeah.
Limitations are as important to making it interesting as what it actually can do.
Well, I was reading something about Marvel. You know, Marvel Comics, there's the magical hero Doctor Strange, and a number of writers have said over the years how hard it is to write for that particular character because, unlike Captain America or unlike the Hulk, there's no real limit to what he's capable of doing, and so the range of his abilities varies greatly depending on the writer. And you know, it's like, well, you can kind of come up with anything. We just have him say a couple of weird words. And as he does that thing with his hands, and he could make anything happen. Well, that's not really a terribly interesting character to write for because, you know, it's similar, I think, sometimes with Superman for a while. It's like he was surviving everything, and so they had to scale him back, and they have to, you know, limit him. And, you know, what do you do with a guy who's capable of anything?
Well, you know, I made a joke of it in my webcomic. One of the things Marvel tried with Doctor Strange was magic separate from science. So they said if it can be done scientifically, he can't do it magically. It's like, so what if you left him the ability to do, especially in light of Marvel Comics, where you've got, like, you know, Reed Richards and Dr. Doom and all these super scientists that do all these things that are basically magical with science. What does Strange do? Throw a deck of cards to somebody?
Yeah, I don't think that's a good framework to go off of, keeping magic and science separate to that degree. I think it's more interesting. Dr. Strange, I'm kind of a fan of Dr. Strange.
I've always liked him, too.
The most interesting Doctor Strange stories tend to be things that he's facing. It's that are more like a detective story, because like if once he actually finds out what's going on, oh, okay, that's what's going on. I can do something about that. But it's like, oh, this is happening. I don't know why.
Right.
This thing happens. I know this person's involved, but I don't know, you know, who's really behind it. I don't know why. So you wind up getting like the occult detective kind of thing.
Right.
I think more of his more interesting stories are along the lines of like an occult detective kind of a thing. Another thing that comes up this was from a Doctor Strange back in the late 1980s, I think. He's having lunch somewhere, and a demon falls out of a hole in the sky and just attacks him. It's a big nasty thing, which. And basically, he's floored. He's not in his sanctum sanctorum. He's having a sandwich at a cafe, and he's not prepared for it, which is kind of like, you know, catching Superman without his superpower suit on, which is not how Superman works. But you know, get what I'm saying, right? You know, and he says something to the effect of like, you know, while he's fighting it, he's trying to come up with stuff that he can do off the cuff without any preparation, and he says something like, "I can't create something out of nothing." But I can use what's here. And he picks up a butter knife and casts a spell in it, and it becomes like this huge flaming sword thing. So he's keying off of changing what he has access to into something useful. And I thought that was an interesting way of approaching it.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, other times he doesn't need to do that. He just waves it.
It's just something. It's like, my defenses are too strong. For, you know, it's, you know, once again,
Well, to a certain degree, that's intrinsic to the superhero genre anyway.
Right.
They're only as powerful... They're only as vulnerable as they need to be to further the plot.
Right.
You know, if he needs to get beaten up in order for the plot to go forward, he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he needs for his shields to hold in order for the plot to go forward, it'll shatter the first two and then stop at the third.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a superhero's very plot driven thing. Yep. So
yeah.
So I guess magic is kind of the same way. It doesn't exist in a story for its own sake.
Right.
It's got a unique magic system. I'm blabbing. Should I stop? You want to
say
something?
No.
All right. This is something that just occurred to me while you were talking. I think it's misguided to say, I've got a fantasy story and I want my magic system to be different. How can I make that happen? I think that's a misguided goal, because at best, you're just going to confuse people because they're not going to understand how it works. Because if you make it, if you go to that degree to try to make it something they don't recognize,
That's not what will keep the reader reading your book.
Yeah,
that your magic system is a totally unique thing. It's like, well, you know, the best you're going to get is them reading, and when they find out the unique thing, they'll stop and go, oh, that's pretty cool. And then they keep on reading the story, not the description of the magical world or anything. So it's like it's a gimmick.
But there's a story I'm working on, and I'll publish probably about the time I die, that I had an idea. It's like, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, wouldn't it be cool if somebody had access to, like, tremendous magical power, but didn't know about it because at the same time they found that, they found something else that basically turned their magic off. Mm-hmm. So you find, this particular character found, like, a book of magic stuff and taught herself because mm-hmm. she's brilliant, and she comes from, like, a lineage. Oh, it doesn't matter. She's an orphan. It's a stereotype. So anyway, but she's got a magic book. She's teaching herself magic. But along at the same time, there was a ring in the horrendously stereotyped. Oh, look, a magic ring. I've never seen that before. But it's not a magic ring. It's actually an anti-magic ring. And she puts it on, and while she's wearing it, she can't do magic. And she doesn't realize that's why she's having so much trouble doing magic.
Yeah.
It's completely... And I was like, wouldn't that be kind of a cool thing if she had the ability to do this stuff,
mm-hmm.
but wasn't able to, and didn't realize why, and until it's like the climax of the book, and you realize whatever's going on. And then, so, can I make my magic system unique, I don't think is particularly a worthwhile goal, but if you go, wouldn't it be cool if this happened, and then try to build the system around it that would make that possible,
mm-hmm.
I think that's interesting. I think that's a good approach.
That's
my opinion.
I think if you look at the real world and, you know, the magic systems that exist in it in like the Middle Ages or shamanism, whatever, I think a magic system's got to be tied into whatever culture you have in your story, whatever the setting is. You can't just say, I want to do a unique magic system and have it tied to nothing. There has to be a reason in the world for why they do the magic system.
Right, you know, and then you make it, you know, if it's a world like ours where magic is returning, well, then it's hardly anybody knows about it. Now everyone who is studying it is a pioneer. They're exploring. They're essentially early scientists. That's one cool way to do it, where everything is a discovery. The other way you go is more of the high fantasy. Magic is an established, intrinsic part of the society. And so it's like, okay, you've got a system, and there are practitioners of it, masters of it, so that means what does society do? How do these people with unspeakable amounts of power deal with being among everybody else who doesn't have that? Do they rule them as gods? Do they stay away as hermits? You know, do they just try to hide among them? These are questions. There's no right or wrong answer to it. You just have to answer those questions because the reader is going to want to know. And if you don't answer them consistently, your reader will leave you, because it's like, well, you know, you've got to have them in your head and then you can dole it out, you know. So what I was saying before about how magic, you only reveal as much as you need, you also only reveal as much about the magical society as you need at times, you know. And, you know, your story, then you can have political elements of magical factions and things like that. And all of it ties into whatever rules system you've come up with for the magic. It can, you know, be a major part of the framework, or it can be more like an urban fantasy where it's just being put together. You know, you just have a puzzle, and the reader only gets a piece at a time.
See, I like, from a gaming standpoint, I love the Warhammer Fantasy, not the new one, but the old
role playing game itself.
Yeah, not the reboot they got mm-hmm. with the box and everything long before that. I like that magic system because you're drawing on it draws on chaos, which is the thing mm-hmm. you're fighting against. So you're actually using the enemy, you know, what you're fighting against to do it.
And if you,
but even if you get the spell off
right,
horrible things could happen even if you do everything mm-hmm. right. And I was playing a wizard, actually did that one time. I threw the spell and killed the enemy, and all of a sudden all the crops around me dropped dead. for
World of Warcraft, about two expansions ago, they introduced the Burning Crusade, which is essentially demons. Which were not really demons, they're extra-dimensional monster soul-sucking. Anyway, the premise of the thing, though, is that magic, even no ordinary wizards, magic is corrupting. It's inherently corrupting. Not because it's evil, just because it's not the way that mortal life works. It has it's like more like radiation. It's like very mutating.
It's a foreign element that,
and it particularly if you played. Well, I don't know. It's like now because I haven't actually played in a couple of years. But at the time I was playing, if you played a demonologist, they stressed how just every demonologist thinks. Oh, damn it! Hang on. Brandon Blackmore.
Hello? I was talking about the Warlock class. I play Warcraft. Okay. Still.
But if you played a demonologist, one of the things that comes up while you're doing your little intro, learning how to be a demonologist, learning how to... Here's how you attack. Here's how... The flavor text that comes across is that every demonologist thinks they will ever, succumb to it and go insane and eventually get enslaved by the demon hordes. As a result of using this power, and every single person before you has been wrong. So, but you think you can do it? Go right ahead. And in this, there's a very similar thing that the wizard gets is the part of their like introductory. Here's your first spell, kind of a deal. Talks about that it's inherently dangerous and it's inherently warping of like your mind and it's so. And I just thought. They don't really carry through with that throughout the game because eventually it turns into you and 20 of your friends beating up a big guy and getting a magic sword over and over and over and over and over again. But the but that premise at the beginning of the game, I thought that was like some of the cooler backstory behind magic that I'd actually seen, particularly in a computer game.
Right.
And I thought that was really nifty.
Well, the idea of magic as some would say magic is like, oh, it's the natural way of the world and people can tap into it. That's one way. Others are magic is an outside force, like kind of like radiation. But it's so incredibly useful that, or people didn't realize the bad effects of it. Then you could liken it to pollution in our world, the byproduct of the things that help allow our lights to run, our cars to move. It's like they're so useful, we're not getting rid of them. But we're not paying attention to what is actually happening, maybe not to us, but the next generation and the next after that. There's a magic system, very different from, oh, this is the power of Gaia, and we bring it, everything is wonderful. And, both of those are perfectly valid. They're you can write an incredible story using either one of them. They're going to be very different stories. But are either of them unique? No. Because more, video games have used them, and books have used them, and we all, once again, I don't think there's anything unique. Just your own interpretation of it, like a big gem, and you're looking through one facet of it. So you see everything just a little differently. That's your facet. That's your way to see it. And if you can get people to come and look through it your way and say, oh, that looks cool, that's what you can achieve. But to make a totally new gem that nobody's ever made before? No.
Yeah.
No, we're all looking through the same prism, the same, just different facets.
Now for me, I'm like you, I've been working on a story, and a couple of years after I die, somebody might actually grab it and print it. But, to me, magic is almost like a neutral force. There's not like a good magic and bad magic. It's the person that wields it. You know what I mean? It's like electricity. It can either power our lights or we can use it to kill somebody. It's... And but I also kind of like the idea of back to the Warhammer. If there's an inherent risk in it, it could kill you. It could. Orson Scott Card got his book on tips on how to write fantasy and sci-fi and all that. Just read through it, and he's talking about magic, and he came up with a system, and he never used it, where every time you use magic, it's like karmic balance. So you do something good, or something horrible is going to happen in the world to balance that out.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and you have no control over that. So what do you do? do you keep going around and say, I healed this person, and next town over, three people drop dead of the plague. I mean,
right.
There is a show called Carnival.
Yes. I was thinking of Carnival as well when you were talking about
it. I've heard about it.
HBO. It was out for two seasons, and then it just kind of withered on the vine. Yeah.
Well, the first season was like really cool, and then the second season was like somewhat less cool.
Yeah, I saw the first one. The setting was basically like the Dust Bowl era Great Depression kind of thing, and it was basically this traveling circus that was going around. But there were also powerful metaphysical things going on, and this one young fellow discovered he had significant power. He could heal, but as he discovered, he would heal somebody, but basically he wasn't adding anything. He was just taking from somewhere else. So if he helped them, and I think there was one thing where he sort of discovered what he could do. There was a girl with a limp, and he healed her leg. And as she's running back into the house, you see all of the crops in their family's yard are just dying as the credits roll.
That's pretty good.
And the good guy, the hero, the protagonist who did this, he didn't know that had happened. He leaves and kind of going, okay, I think I got a sense of what I can do in this world. Meanwhile, he's just, their farm's bankrupt now because all their crops are dead. And only the audience is going, oh, damn, that's not good.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool shot.
Yeah, very good visuals. And then I didn't, and there was another character who also had power of some sort. And I didn't watch enough of it to see, but essentially it's like one was God and one was the devil, effectively. But they hadn't come into knowing what they were and confronting each other, but it was setting up for that.
Yeah. Also, that actually ties into the whole mystery thing, because that show in particular got less interesting the more they explained what was going on.
Yeah.
While it was still kind of there's a lot of shows like that. Lost is, I think, the most recent big example of that. The more they explained, the less sense the show made.
Right.
Until you're just like, oh, you're just making this up moment to moment.
I think the producers actually confessed that too.
To me, that was the thing is like Lost. They said, we have a story to tell, and to me, if you've got that, you should just go ahead and tell the story if it takes. Two seasons, three seasons, whatever. If you've got a story, and to me, I think that's what a lot of it was. They just tried to extend it. It's like, okay, we're getting six seasons.
Right.
The sort of
a shark jumping idea. But I find that with a number of TV shows that the first season, because there's so much unknown, so much potential, and you want to kind of look behind the scenes and find the answers to these things. But once they reveal it, it's almost never as cool as what you hoped it would be, what your own imagination comes up with. And if the show goes on too long, it just starts to feel a little awkward,
Yeah.
I think I think stories like that with lots of deep mystery and things, if there's always another layer, if the onion has infinite layers, you get sick of that onion.
I'm tired of onion.
It's like another layer. God, can't we just say, you've won. Find a new book or a TV show to watch. We're done with this one. We're going to have closure and wrap it up. Everyone's going to wish we kept going, but we want to finish while we still got some gas in the tank.
There's a panel that I did not attend that I think was in this room last night called Knowing When to Stop. Like, how do you know when to stop writing books in this series, when to stop having seasons of the TV show, whatever. And I can totally sympathize with somebody who has a successful franchise of whatever it is they're doing, and I can write another book and make another 10 grand or 20 grand or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or why would I choose not to do that when I know that I can write a book, even if it's a bad book, and make 20 grand off of it? Why would I ever not do that?
Right.
So I can totally sympathize with just cranking out product and making money off of it. But it's inevitable. You get to the point where you read a book and you're like, this should have stopped two books ago.
Yeah.
This is. Superheroes have a real, real problem with that, because while you have like a story like Watchmen or various other miniseries that go for like a dozen episodes, and then oh, that was cool, and it ended. You've told your story, it had a beginning, right, and an end. That's cool. Superhero comics have a tendency to stay around for decades.
Right. They have that soap opera thing where it never really ends. And I remember I was a big fan of the X-Men when I was in during the 80s. High school and college, I was reading. I got pretty much all the titles. And at some point, I was reading yet another one, another sort of climactic conclusion of that current arc. And I was like, I read this already. The dialogue's the same, too. And I started to notice there was a cyclical pattern. There was always, you know, there was mystery starts, you figure out things, and eventually, it, you know, there's the big climactic battle with the big bad guy. But there's always one or two heroes who weren't there because they've already started the next arc. So these arcs were kind of just like the new one would start while the old one was coming to an end, and they would leapfrog over each other. But it was the same stuff. It was just a different boss. So I pretty much at that point just gave up on comics entirely because I realized, like a soap opera, it'll never actually end. And I can get hooked on a soap opera very easily. I like the drama and wondering what's going to happen next. But once the crises or the will-they-won't-they moment that I got hooked on is resolved and they start new things, I stop watching it. Because the story that I tuned in for is now over. And I don't want to see my characters that I came to identify with morph into something else. It's like, I'm done. I'll come back in 2 years and it'll all be new again for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm done with this arc. I'll, you know, and comic books was the same way for me, except for, you know, Watchmen, which had a beginning, middle, and end. It's done. It's like, awesome. And I like stories that end.
Or V for Vendetta. Or yeah. There's any number of really good books. I mean, not everybody likes Watchmen, but in a general premise, that's if the story doesn't end,
right?
There's also truism in superheroes isn't the topic of the I'll tell you anyway. Well, there's a truism about
superheroes. I have an idea of how to tie this back to magic if I can remember.
Superheroes are the modern mythology. I mean,
okay, that's good enough.
I mean, yeah,
we'll go with that. But it's not really a saying so much as it is. An observation, a phenomenon. If a character sticks around long enough, it'll get ruined. Because if the character stays the same long enough, it gets dull and they've run out of stories they can tell with that character. So they have to do something.
Yes,
they've got to shoot Batgirl in the spine to make her a paraplegic to do something that they haven't done with her before. That kind of deal.
Right.
They've got to have Batman have Gotham City get burned to the ground and have, you know, be a crater because they've run out of things they can do with Batman. They've got to reboot Superman and make him so he can't fly around the Earth and change the time stream, you know, in order to do something interesting with Superman. So you get to a point.
But they can't actually kill him off because suddenly that company doesn't have, you know, there goes me bread and butter.
Yeah. Actually, they've killed Superman. Like, actually, he actually died a good 6 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time that it really made huge headlines is that time when, then they had, Steel and Superboy.
Right,
and
they brought in four new Superman.
Yeah, when Doomsday killed him. That was the one that, made... But he had actually died in the comics, five times before that. Either faked his death.
But that's the one that they marketed. They pushed that the most and made it a big effort. But you still knew the guy was coming back because it's Superman. Yeah,
they're not going to...
You can't cook that golden goose.
Well, that's me. Marvel's getting ready to do the death of Spider-Man in their ultimate line. I'm like, really? He actually wants to believe
it. Right. Well, they killed off Johnny Storm of the Fantastic Four. It's like...
Oh, is that which one of them died?
Apparently.
Because I remember reading somewhere they were going to kill off one of the original Fantastic Four, and I don't really follow that comic.
No, me either, but I heard that Storm was the one that they... the torch was the one that they smoked.
But, yeah, getting like TV shows.
Beer all night.
Enjoy. I like Pushing Daisies.
Susan really liked Pushing Daisies.
I mean, I liked it. I just like the setup of how he figured out what he could do. You know, he brings his mother back after she has a stroke, and he doesn't know about the time limit. So a minute later, this little girl that he has a crush on, her father drops dead.
Hmm.
And he doesn't figure that out till, you know, a couple of months later. He's at school, and he's catching fireflies, and he figures out that if they stay alive for more than a minute, he starts seeing other ones drop out of the sky. And then it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of liked that because it was magical. But I liked the fact that he had consequences. You know, it's like, all right, mm-hmm. I can bring him back, but I got 60 seconds for them to do whatever it is.
Right. Yeah. Chance for closure, but they don't get to stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we got into this because we were talking about, you know, the mystery of the magic of a magic system and trying to, if you, you know, unravel the mystery too much, then eventually the story doesn't have any hook anymore. If you explain the magic too much, it's almost like science fiction, where it's essentially a technology. You know, it's as possible as, you know, faster than light drive. If you are building, you know, magical storage facilities, and like they drain the energy from demons or whatever and put it in this, and they're fueling it. Now there's an industry about it. It's like, okay, certainly not, you know, there's no mystery to it anymore. It's just a different kind of technology or, yeah, you know, industrial process.
Sorry, made me think of it. Wasn't even an official D&D supplement. Somebody tried to work pirates in, and where you can't have gunpowder weapons. They essentially had oversized magic wands for cannon. Mm-hmm. On wheels and everything, but it was just essentially a...
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, just go ahead and give them cannon. All right, really? Is it that?
It's okay. Really, you can do that. You're allowed.
Old friend of ours, who has since moved on to California, he was very fond of saying that magic in a setting, unless it's extremely rare or extremely exclusive, it will change the society to the point where it's unrecognizable. Because if, say, like in a D&D world, there's a couple of different like stock D&D worlds. One of them is called Forgotten Realms.
Yep.
Which one of the premises of that game is magic is freaking everywhere. Everywhere. And if that were actually the case, it wouldn't simply be, it's like medieval Europe, but we've got glowstones in every house. It wouldn't work that way.
Yeah.
Because if you can wave a wand and plow your fields, plows would never get invented.
Yeah. Right.
You know, if you can have a glowstone in your house that provides light, the incandescent light bulb will never get invented.
But,
you know,
if your priest can raise your dead mother back from being run over by the ox cart, you know, what does that do to the population? What does that do?
Right.
Yeah. And it would diverge so drastically because the normal human development, well, what we think of as normal, because you know it's our world.
Right.
But the development of technology would diverge so much that it would become like almost unrecognizable, and it would really peeve him to have a setting where it's just like the world at 1600, except it has some magic stuff in it that's very common. He's like, you would never get to the 1600s. The 1600s would not look anything like the real 1600s.
Right.
You wouldn't have gunpowder. You wouldn't have ships of sails. You wouldn't have merchant fleets. You would. There'd be like this entire shift. The entire world would look completely different.
Right.
And
you know, thinking about just what you know these guys are doing for us now, and what no one could envision what you know technology would allow us to accomplish even you know 5 years ago or you know. How you know people who said, "Oh well, this is how the world's going to be when with these things coming out." 5 years later, it's not like anything that they thought of. Similarly, if human ingenuity is human ingenuity, whether magic appears or the transistor, people are going to come up with ways to use it. That the writer's got to spend like 3 years locked up, you know, as a hermit, just coming up with as many weird things he can think of that a human people would logically start applying this technology in a lot of different ways. You know, so there would be the equivalent, I think the equivalent of some sort of industry. Those who are this very intelligent, very capable, would start to monopolize interests in certain ways. And, you know, so there would be some things about involving human nature that are similar. But, you know, yes, there wouldn't be gunpowder, but there would be ways to... There would be weapons that would be easier for anybody to use that probably have some sort of magical principle involved.
Well, that's an easy way to go.
Well, yeah, and you're always going to have effects. We was on the steampunk panel before this, and they was talking about you know how steam engines change society, and somebody brought up, she said, you know, it improved mortality rate among women and children because it made iron and steel products cheaper so you could afford a bed, and your wife didn't have the baby on the dirty floor. So there's less chance of infection. And, it, you know, that's something you wouldn't even consider.
Right. Yeah. So
if magic is too prolific, you run into the Star Trek problem, which is you basically, if you've got a transporter and you've got a thing that can basically make matter, you know, it can like, and I've got a dinner in front of me. It's made out of molecules. If you can do that, you pretty much have to, and it's a Doctor Strange problem. And to a lesser extent, like the Superman problem. If you can solve the world's problems by listening hard, you've really got to come up with like a really weird problem that you can't just solve.
Yeah, how do you challenge somebody who can do anything? Yeah. So, you know, for my world, magic is extremely rare. Only one character can use it. And even she doesn't really know much about how it works. She just knows the few things she can do and doesn't have anybody who can teach her more. So, fortunately, you know, slowly but surely, I'll peel back the onion a little bit at a time. But I have really no intention of suddenly moving my world into a high magic world and, you know, heading in the direction that we were talking about, because I'm not planning on thinking about what's a world like that magic is so omnipresent. You know, all the world's ills that we know of can be solved by magic, so there's got to be some new world's ills that come along with it, and I'd have to envision all those too. I'm like, that's not the direction I wanted to go with my story.
Are there costs involved in magic in your story?
If she tries to do magic too quickly, she can take it from sort of the air, like, around her. That's, as I said, it's sort of bandwidth. It's like, you know, she can channel her effects, but she needs to take time to do it. If she's in a hurry, she can basically fuel it from her own self, and it makes her ill, it makes her sick, it makes her tired. It could kill her if she tries something too big and can't pull it off. It's like the spell is like, okay, well, I need energy. Well, you know, and it still doesn't get it done, but it'll take everything it can from her and then to try to accomplish itself, accomplish the mission it was given. And if she doesn't have enough energy or she doesn't prepare it properly and it's inefficient, it could kill her. So she's got to be careful about trying to use it on the fly.
All right. I was just thinking that going outside the unique magic system thing, because I'm not sure what else we can beat that horse with. But rules that, things that make magic interesting, costs. If there's no cost involved, either time, energy, risk, whatever, then it ceases to be as interesting.
Yep.
You know, even if only a few people can do it, if it's very simple for them, that's dull. You know.
Right.
If there's no limits or constraints as to what it can accomplish,
right,
it becomes less interesting.
Yeah,
like, say that you actually have to, like, I don't know, see or touch whatever you're affecting. Mm-hmm. That's a worthwhile limitation. Mm-hmm. Because, for one thing, it makes assassinating somebody in Rome from here, you know, not doable.
Right. You still have the challenge. You've got to get to them. You've got to get your hands on them in some way. And then now it's become, you know, it's basically just, it's like any other assassin planning. You got to get close enough and get, how you doing?
You know. And of course, then the real difficulty would be getting away.
Yeah.
But talking about the real world magic systems, there's, actually, this does tie back into the unique thing. There's lots of interesting things that have already been done that there's no reason not to continue doing them. Laws of, like, contagion and that sort of thing. Your standard, you know, Western hermetic magic kind of laws, you know, voodoo dolls. If it looks like something you can affect, then, you know, you can affect it by affecting something similar.
Yeah.
That kind of deal. Or I've got a piece of your hair, you know, so now I can do something with you. And that's something Jim Butcher uses a lot of that stuff in his books.
Well, yeah, I liked, you know, one of the things that always got me about him was the wizard's curse. You kill me, and I can use my power to, you know, destroy you in some way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I kept wondering about that, and then he finally ran into, I can't think of the mercenary's name, and mercenaries, you know, told him that, said, you know, I might have to kill you one day, and he's like, you know, I could curse you. He goes, yeah, how's that work through a, you know, quarter mile away, high-powered scope?
Yeah.
He goes, you won't even know until the bullet's already through you. And I was like, oh, yeah, and it's kind of...
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, and that's actually not the first place I'd read that either.
Yeah.
The whole dying curse thing.
Yep.
That's fairly standard.
Mm-hmm. We're drawing upon things that are part of myth and tradition that go back a long time. So, you know, coming up with something, if you come up with something unique, it gets away from what a lot of us growing up heard about a little bit here, a little bit there, and it just doesn't feel right to us. It's like a musical chord that isn't quite right. You're like, no, you know.
That actually reminds me of something. I think that the part of the premise of the panel, like, is it possible to come up with a unique magic system? The part of the premise of that is that people actually want to distinguish what they're working on from what came before, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that can be bad. For example, if you have vampires that don't drink blood and walk around in the daytime and sparkle, are they even still vampires? You know, right. There's panels, you know, at this con and others about that.
Yeah.
It's like, if you change it to a point where it ceases to be recognizable as what you're calling it, if your magic system is so unique that it doesn't really resemble anything everybody else calls magic, is it still magic, or is it just science fiction, and you're summoning creatures from another dimension and siphoning off their life force and putting it in a big jar? And
it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, well, we call them vampires because that sells better than, you know, glitter people.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah, it's
it's not intrinsically bad, but it's a cost involved.
Yeah.
The stranger you make it, the less recognizable and intuitive it gets.
Mm-hmm.
The clock on the wall says it's time to go.
Yep.
And so
thanks for coming.
Last
in.
Questions.
I've had a.
You've been quiet. You have anything to say? No. All right. Nice meeting you. You guys have a good week. And end of the week.
Yes.
End of the weekend. Whatever.
I think work to drive through RP.